Hello and welcome to what is the final episode in our series here at Shop Talk. So it's with a slight tinge of sadness that I introduce our last guest for this series, Sarah Wardland, Senior Vice President of Brand at Million Dollar Baby Co. Thank you also to everyone who's tuned into this series. Genuinely hope you found it useful and entertaining. If you have, please let us know. It's always so good to hear from you. And without further delay, let's get started with this final episode in the Shop Talk series. All right, Sarah.
John.
Welcome to the final Shop Talk episode on the Marketing Freaks podcast.
Happy to be here. Well,
in some circles, they would refer to this as the headline act.
Well, I'm honored to be considered.
which is, you can take that badge, definitely. So, we're going to be talking about kind of the work you do on brand at Million Dollar Baby Company. Mm-hmm. But first off, let's talk a little bit about your background, because you've worked for some amazing brands and also kind of shifted your career from one field into brand.
Yeah, definitely.
Give us the tour of that.
Yeah, so I'm an anomaly in the marketing world. My undergrad was chemical engineering. I went to Purdue. I worked at Procter & Gamble, PepsiCo, in R&D, product development. And that's where I really learned that I loved brands. You know, I loved working on products that, impact customers' lives and saying like, yeah, I work on, Quaker Oats. And people are like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. But I learned what brand marketing was through that and wanted to shift into that seat. So went back, got my MBA, and yeah, I've been with Million Dollar Baby for 9 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, and we're a family-owned business in Los Angeles. We've been around for about 35 years. We make baby furniture. So we design and manufacture cribs, or sometimes they're referred to as cots, dressers,
okay,
seating, and basically anything you need to create your an inspiring nursery that's also healthy and good for baby.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is it four brands in the group or five brands?
Five brands. So we have a house of brands sort of strategy where we have different brands that are positioned to different places in the market. So everything from value to luxury, traditional styles to modern. So I like to say we have the best-selling crib on Amazon. That's really at a value price point. And we also have a brand that sells a crib that is $10,000 made to order for the celebrity and design community, which is beautiful.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I guess as a brand marketer, that must keep you really busy.
Yeah, I mean, it's so fun because you get to focus on one industry, but you get to see all of the ways you can go to market within one sector. So it's fun. Every day is different. I love working on the unique challenges that each brand has in its growth stage.
And how do you approach that? Because brand marketing for a value product, mm-hmm, that's doing really well on Amazon versus brand marketing for a more premium product, completely different challenge.
Yeah, completely different. And that was a learning curve for us, to really think about what each brand's marketing mix needed to be. I think, when you're working on sub-brands or multiple brands, it can be easy to try to reapply the same thing to each. That might work in the short term for efficiencies, but not for long-term, growth. So, it is a challenge, but it's fun.
Fantastic. So we were talking yesterday a little bit about how historically, mm-hmm, the focus of the group has been wholesale, mm-hmm, and working with retail partners. And then in more recent years, kind of pushing more or introducing more activity in the D2C world.
Yes.
So what I'm really interested to kind of dive into in this episode is how you manage that balance, because you have to keep your retail partners happy. And you don't want to just introduce a competitor and kind of take their lunch money off them, right? But you also want to grow your own D2C activity. So how do you approach that? Because that's a really delicate balance to strike.
Yes, it is. I mean, the definition of channel conflict, I think.
Yeah.
but for us, you know, as our brands grew, and especially being in a category like baby, which is hugely emotional, you know, it's a huge, you know, emotionally connective product for a lot of people. It might be, you know, the most expensive thing they buy for their baby before mm-hmm. they're born. We just found that people really wanted to connect with us, hear directly from us, whether they ended up purchasing in a wholesale channel, just that wanting us, the brand, to be with them along the entire purchase journey was really the driver of that. So, you know, we set up our websites on Shopify. We didn't really do very much performance marketing to start. It was really just a lot of direct organic because we had such great awareness in the wholesale channel. So that really drove the D2C channel because, you know, people had already heard of the brand by shopping on Amazon, Target, maybe seeing them in their local shop and just wanted to like get more information. So the D2C channel has been growing, but our wholesale channel has been growing likewise.
Because I think if you get it right, one supports the other really nicely.
Yeah, definitely.
Like from a brand perspective, having somewhere that people can go and have a direct connection with the group or the individual brands is really positive, isn't it? And whether they buy there or on Amazon, it's kind of that serving a brand purpose. What was the motivation to launch D2C? Sorry, was it more along that lines of brand and connection with your customers, or was it a new revenue channel, or was it a combination of both?
I would say more the connection with the customers. I mean, I would say the sales growth has been a happy side effect. Uh-huh. But yeah, again, like people wanting to understand more about the products, you know, get more information. You know, when you're shopping for baby products, this is a category that nobody knows anything about, you know, like you've never heard of these baby brands. You're on a very short time frame. You only got 9 months till the baby comes. And it's overwhelming, you know, for people. So they really want to have that guidance. And you know, that's something that especially our bigger wholesale partners can't do the best job of. You know, they have the eyeballs, they have, you know, the technology and the reach. But as far as getting into the nitty gritty of why should I buy one product over the other, that really needs, you know, more of a personal sort of shopping experience. So so in addition to the brand team, I also lead the consumer support team at our teams because
you really must be busy.
Again, it's fun. But yeah, this whole, we think again of everything in the brand experience needs to be connective and really aim towards helping the customer, you know, get that product they want. And one nice side effect of having so many brands is, you know, if our particular brand isn't their style or isn't their price point, we are able to guide them to another brand that might be a better fit.
Yeah, perfect. Let's go back to that point you just made about also managing the consumer support.
Mm-hmm.
I assume or imagine that's a fairly unique position for a brand marketer to be able to have that direct feedback from the consumers or customers coming in all the time. That must be really busy, but beneficial as a brand marketer to have that direct link.
Yeah, I mean, the insights that we get directly back, and again, having primarily been a wholesaler, you know, customer insights were not something that we were getting, right? You know, retailers and wholesalers rightfully control their own data. They're maybe not willing to share everything, but through our consumer support team, you know, people who are just starting their purchasing journey and asking questions, like we get so many great insights from that, and also feedback about our products that we relay back into the product development team and, you know, ultimately create much better products. And I think having been leading the consumer support team, I think we have a much closer link with our brand managers of what is it out there that people are looking for, and going back to the, you know, D2C wholesale, ultimately our wholesale partners want us to build brand equity, build brand awareness, and build better products for them. So by us having that link with the customer, I think we serve our retail partners even better than we could.
That's a really good point. It should be win-win, shouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you manage brand consistency between multiple retail partners who are going off and not going off and doing their own thing, but they'll have their own projects and their own, you know, promotional calendars and initiatives. Mm. And then you've got the D2C arm, and you want to keep brand consistency across everything.
Yes.
How do you do that?
It's a challenge. I mean, I think, you know, just in terms of content, if you think about each retailer has their own limitations in terms of, you know, photography, video, copy. So, you know, we're always modifying for the channel. So we'll have, you know, 10 different versions of our photography so that if you're on Amazon, we're going to show you a totally different first picture than if you're on our own product page and landing page. Again, we're assuming where you are in the purchase journey, where you are at each retailer, and talking more specifically. For example, if you're on Amazon, you know, we're going to lean more into pricing, more into the value component, even for our more premium brands, that's important. But on our own channel, we're going to talk more about maybe the community and you know, more about the brand story that, you know, resonates with people, perhaps, are even our eco conscious, you know, sustainability initiatives. Like, that's more important at that point of the journey than if you're literally on Amazon looking to, you know, add to your 2-day shipping on Prime.
Yeah, I guess you're in a different mindset, aren't mm-hmm. you? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. The other thing we do is we have a really robust marketing promotional calendar. So we try to align the market as much as possible. We're not on sale very often, but when we are, we try to leverage all of our partners to maximize those promotional opportunities. So what we don't want is one retailer doing a sale one week and then another retailer doing another sale. We keep that really well controlled, and I think it helps amplify the news, like, oh, Baby Leto is on sale, right? Uh-huh. And then we see that on social media, on Reddit, people saying like, oh wow, the Hudson Crib's on sale, everybody go get it. So I think that also helps, and the retailers love that because then they get that direct traffic.
That's amazing. My last question, or set of questions, we'll see how it goes, is about attribution.
Yes.
Because when you've got, first off, you've got a product where it's a big decision. It's a shame for most of your products, it's not an impulse purchase. And so there's a lag, there's a time lag, which introduces challenges. You've then got the challenge of the fact you're marketing and directing traffic to the D2C sites, but they may then purchase on Amazon or go into Target and touch and feel and look at the product and that type of stuff too. Where do you start with that?
Yeah, I mean, that is our big initiative right now as we've grown and building our own attribution models, working with agencies to help us build this out. We're working with our business intelligence team to build out a fully robust, you know, view of the customer and all of these touch points. Yeah, it is a challenge. But I think for us, we think of each point in, you know, within the marketing mix, you're going to have different KPIs, right? So, yeah. For example, one of the first discovery channels for us is Pinterest, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, running on simple like KPIs like conversion, like, that's not going to work because this person is in their trimester. They're not going to be shopping, you know, purchasing for maybe 5 months later. But email capture is a great KPI for us. And so that, you know, that way we can get them in the funnel, re-engage with them, and, you know, actually be a little patient with, you know, the flow of the information that we have, kind of nurture that relationship. We find that people really appreciate that and not having a strict sales approach. We are going to be opening our own showroom, and we're going to have the same sort of mentality there. It's not going to be a sales-oriented channel. It's going to be really about that first customer engagement, really helping people through the way of, and we're going to be using Shopify in order to get that attribution that if, you know, for example, they go into the store, look around 5 months later, maybe grandma purchases the crib, but through unique links, we'll be able to track that and see that customer flow.
That's really cool. And it sounds like all of that is based on a really deep understanding of how people buy and shop for your products and what stage of life they're at and mm-hmm. how long that takes and everything else. And I think there's no such thing as perfect, is there, when it comes to attribution, but it's tying it in as best you can to that that journey and not looking at every platform through the same lens.
Yes, yes, exactly. I mean, each platform will tell you that they're doing the best job. and especially as we've gotten into things like streaming and YouTube ads, you know, like when you're shifting again from that wholesale to the D2C side, you really have to, again, kind of evaluate each lens of the marketing mix and focus on what is giving you indicators that, you know, you've got this person, you've locked them in the journey, they're with you along the way. And then ultimately they'll be through you through consideration, purchase, and then ultimately advocacy.
That's fantastic. Look, Sarah, I could chat about this stuff with you for ages, but you have a flight to catch. But thank you so much for making the time to jump in here and talk me through, or talk us through, what we've discussed on this episode before you head off. It was just such a great way to end our series here at Shop Talk. So thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode and also our series here at Shop Talk. If you enjoyed it, please do let us know. Drop us a note on Instagram or find me on LinkedIn. It'd be great to kind of hear what you thought of this, and we very much hope to see you on the next episode. Thank you.